here's my favorite story, and then here's my dumb business guy story. I've often talked about Bob Stupak. I started Vegas World in Las Vegas, which is now the Stratosphere. And for years, the Vegas World Hotel was filled. 90% of its marketing was direct response ads and direct mail selling a prepaid package. $100, you got your room for two nights, 3 days in the travel industry language, and money to play with and so forth. And so he had a very successful direct mail package. And what Bob started doing, I think for 3 or 4 years, when you got your bundle of goodies, when you checked in, one of the things that was in the bundle of goodies was a little package of 5 Vegas World postcards. And a little toilet strip wrapper around them said, we're sure you're going to want to send postcards home to your family and friends, and you don't have to buy the stamps. Just fill out the postcards and drop them in the special mail slot downstairs in the lobby, and we'll mail them for you. And, of course, what he did before he mailed them is enter all the names and addresses in his database. So five people get this postcard, which the people send while they're there, right? They do it while they're there. Which we're having a wonderful time, wish you were here. And, of course, right then, they're at their happiest, just like you just said, because they're there. And they want to validate, you know, the people that they made a good decision. So even if they're a little grumpy, they're not saying that. They're saying, we had a wonderful time. And then a week later, what arrives in their mail but the direct mail package from Bob Stupak, allowing them to buy the same wonderful package that their friend or relative just bought. Well, the hotel it had 500 and some odd rooms in it. So, you know, Bob said on an average night he got 1,000 names in order to turn around and use, which he got for free other than the price of the stamp to mail the postcard. Now, I can't tell you how many times I've told the story and had nobody figure out how to use it. I'm speaking for Time Warner Cable in New England last year. And, of course, this is their user group, their client group of TV advertisers. So, first of all, why the hell they brought me in, I'll never know. And I'm kind of walking on eggs, you know, not to tell them, cut your TV budget in half and go do something intelligent. It's another one I'll never be invited back to. If you wonder why the number of speaking dates I'm taking each year is declining, this is exactly why. And there's a guy there, and he's got three of these giant entertainment emporiums. You know, they're umpteen thousand square feet, and they got a sports bar in them, and they got a disco in them, and they got 50 pool tables and a bowling alley and a video arcade all under one roof. And he's 100% of his advertising budget is television. That's all he does. And he showed his TV commercials, and they're excellent commercials, and all that's working real well. And so on a break, I said to him, what kind of database do you have? How many, you know, customer names do you have on your list? Don't keep a list. Now, in that business, if you're not going to do anything else, you do birthdays, right? You got to do birthdays. I mean, God knows what he could do in this business of birthdays. So I said, well, in addition to, you know, your own database, let me tell you a little trick that would be perfect for you. And I tell him the Stupak story. I said, so what you want is a bunch of postcards and a little thing on every table, right? A picture of the place and a mail slot somewhere, and people can jot, you know, their friends or whatever and go drop the postcards in, right? And then a week later, you send them a little package of coupons and an invitation to come in and have fun at your fun emporium, right? The guy is looking at me. I might as well have been the end of that guy last time. I might as well have been speaking Martian for all the good I was doing, right? And bottom line, here's the answer. The answer is, that's too much work. Which is why most people waste so much money in their advertising, because they do the easiest thing. And it's why you guys don't do direct mail. I've always said the problem with direct mail, the main reason why most people don't do a lot of direct mail, is there's no direct mail salesman who shows up at their door and says, do you want to renew your ad? Or do you want a pen with a green cap or a blue cap this year, Bob? That guy doesn't show up. And most people are just doing the easiest thing. But the leverage in that, you know, is extraordinary. Now, you in a situation where you need to get all your customers back once a year, Chauncey, and your guys need to get all your customers back once a year, roughly in a three-month period of time, and the rest of the year, pretty much, you don't do anything with them, and you don't see them. So talk about that a little bit. What do you do, and what do you tell your guys to do?
We got to, there's one sale a year, so we got to make it when it happens, and everybody's got to get the taxes done.
Yeah, see, he's got a sale all the time, right, Bill?
Yeah, we
I mean, you got a sale all the time.
Yeah, we look for a four-time visit a year.
Yeah, and if there's not a flood once a year, they create one. You got one, it would be the equivalent of him having one sale a year.
Yeah, and if they don't come to the sale, they went to somebody else's sale, and I don't get to even try to get them as a prospect or get them as a customer for another 12 months. So
we might do the best to remind our listeners, people listening to these tapes are not going to be able to hear your voice and figure out what business you're in. So we probably ought to get in the habit of
Chauncey's the tax guy. We'll put a little index thing in, but Chauncey, tax offices and your clients are in the tax prep business. So now you got to get them back once a year.
A lot of my consulting clients ask me, so should I send them a letter at Thanksgiving or a Christmas card? And some people do that, that's great if they want to send, but I personally don't do it because my particular target market does not think about, I'm not in the tax business. I'm in the get somebody some money tomorrow business. I'm in the refund anticipation loan business.
The money business. That's a good business.
I'm in the keep the IRS off your back business. I'm in the peace of mind so you can sleep at night business. I mean, I got three different target groups of customers that I do specific campaigns toward, but I'm not in. Yeah, we prepare the tax return, but so does everybody else in my industry. Yeah, we do electronic filing and get some people's refund monies back quicker, but that's not the real business that we're in. The real business we're in is being able to say to Joe, as soon as you get your W-2, you can come to our place before we close, and you can have your money tomorrow. And we will get. That's our job. You know, just bring your stuff in, we'll take care of it, and you get your money tomorrow.
Well, you just gave a brilliant demonstration of what we were talking about before, being able to enunciate what business you're in and define it based on your customer, not based on your product. And if any people listening, if they wanted that principle demonstrated, you just did it.
You're fast cash business.
Yeah, but it's once a year, and they know it. So these people, this particular market, the lower-income blue-collar crowd, they love tax season. A lot of people think about going to tax season. They hate having to pay taxes and the IRS. Well, this particular group loves tax season because they're getting $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000. Well, as soon as they get their W-2, they're just like panting, like
a bonus.
It is like their bonus for the year. And then in 24 hours, that sucker is spent.
What do you do to get them back? You haven't talked to them in 8 months, and now you're going to talk to them again. What's your marketing approach look like?
Right. That we've tested about five different ways to get referrals back. We not only in our pitch in the first part of January, once Christmas is over, our first part of January, they get a pitch, and it's selling them on every reason why they need to come back to us and all the extra bonuses and premiums and a discount and. I don't take for granted that they're going to come back. I sell them on the fact that and remind them that they're going to come back and do business with us. And, oh, by the way, the Refer a Friend program and we offer a cash deal where we give a discount to their friend. We have little coupon slips right there in the mailing, and they give them to their friends. Not only will we give them a discount, but we'll give them cash for bringing their friend in. That's one way. But there's other ways when they're actually in the office and we give them the pitch. We don't want to give all of our money to the advertising people. We like to give our money to our customers here. And we have these big green $10 bill looking things with it, where they fill their name out. We just hand it to them and with a little flyer explaining it, and they go give them to their friends. But there's like five of those different things that happen from January. We send them a thank you letter, and thank you for your business, and oh, by the way, here's some more Refer a Friend slips. I mean, it's four or five different steps where we don't just ask for a referral once. It's like five times in the tax season where they get something from us some way, shape, or form asking for a referral. But the number one that works the best is right as we finish the tax return, right there at the computer station, at the point of sale where we've just done the service, the tax preparer is trained to look him in the eyes and say, can you think of one or two people that you know of, family members, neighbors, coworkers, that would be interested in getting their money back tomorrow too? Or would be interested in not having to worry about the IRS, or interested in paying less taxes, or whatever the particular guy is, and sit there and wait for, and just shut up and wait for an answer. Just sales 101. And if they can picture, and if they say that one or two or three people's names, the refer a friend is almost automatically sold right there, because the guy's pictured it in their mind and they give them the refer a friends in their hands. And that right there, that particular, of the five different steps, that one, we get 60-some% of our referral business comes from that step.
Pay them $20 right then to call them.
And I would
not bad.
I would think the ones that...
And 50 if they say, I'll be in life tomorrow.
And I would think your referrals, the people who were referred to you, are probably easier to get referrals out of, because that's how they... Because
they've learned the system already.
Right. Yeah, that's
no doubt
exactly
about
right. Well, and it's we always talk to doctors. The biggest, when you get somebody to refer, then immediately reward them, make a big deal out of it, because reward and recognition encourages the same behavior, and it's easier to get a second referral from somebody who's referred than it is to get the first referral from somebody who hasn't, because the guy who referred already knows how to do it. He doesn't need any training. He just needs to repeat the behavior that he already did. The first time around, you're trying to train him.
One other little thing about referrals. My employees hate this, that we do this, and they cringe at the thought. But we actually do send cash. It's not a check. It's actual cash money. And we actually do it in $2 bills. And so if it's $10 or $20, we actually put them in. We go and order this money at the bank, and we have big stacks of $2 bills.
I was mad at it, don't you?
Yeah, we've been doing that with carpet cleaners, Scott, ever since I started. I used to have a $10 reward referral program, which we still do, but we used to have the guys send, you know, $5 or $10. And one of my clients back in 1994, he decided to send $2 bills, and so that's the referral reward that a lot of my, well, actually hundreds of my cleaners use, is they send out $2 bills, because it's memorable. It's the whole thing of going back and creating an experience.
Where did you get this? Where did you get this $2 bill? And they say, from the tax guy up there where I got my taxes done. That's the whole,
Somebody said to me on a plane last week, and I'm sitting in first class, so it's, you know, white collar person. And we're talking about the rash of TV game shows, right? And the guy says, I like that 21 show a lot better than the Regis show. And I said, why do you like it better? He said, because they give him the cash instead of a check. Now, we all know they're not walking out of there with the cash. They're going right backstage and handing it back in. But on the show, they see all the money. And on a Regis show, he's constantly showing them a check. Now, this is a pretty sophisticated guy sitting next to me. But that had an impact on him.
Well, just the people that are actually doing the mailings and stuffing the cash in the envelopes and sealing it up and mailing it, they're like sweating every day because all this money is going out the door.
And they think you're stupid for doing something.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That.
And
I mean, right. Those employees of yours, every time they're stuffing those two guys, I can just see them grumbling. Oh, they're so stupid. They could just give them a $10 check or something.
Wouldn't this be
I mean, the employees don't have a clue as to what's going on.
Yeah, by the way, great point. TJ, anytime your employees think what you're doing is either idiotic or is an operational pain in the ass, you generally know you're right on target.
Amen.
Right.
Exactly.
You're doing right. Exactly the right thing.
And most of these great ideas that have come from around this table so far are just ideas that salespeople or people that hustle for a living, you know, this sort of comes natural. A lot of these money-sucking ideas just come natural to a pitchman. Or a pitch person or a salesperson, but...
Wait a minute. Money-sucking ideas?
Hey, man, I trademarked Operation Money Suck, so I have to...
The truth is, whenever we think we've got it all figured out, that's when you know exactly the opposite's going to happen. It's going to be a miserable failure. So if you don't like what you're doing, it'll probably work.
I have a question for Chauncey. Chauncey, do you use bounce backs at all, or do you use any kind of practices like that with your existing clients?
What do you mean by bounce backs?
Well, if you go to a car wash or you know, if you go get a Christmas tree or whatever, you go to the place and place that when you do the sale, they give you a coupon or something that's off on your next purchase. That it's called a bounce back to try to get you back there as quickly as possible. Most commonly at car washes and things like that. You guys do that at all?
Can't do it because it's a year away.
That's too big of a gap in his business, so he's got to send it to them. But it's an excellent technique.
Yeah, Craig, if I can comment, Bill Glazer, the retail guy here, we developed a frequent buyer club program and for our stores, and what we have found is that it actually has increased the visit by that consumer by at least one additional time per year, but more importantly, it's doubled the amount that they've spent in a year. And our program, let me just explain it briefly.
Mm-hmm.
Our program is we have 15 different punches on the card. For every $50 that a customer spends, they get a punch. I have retailers all over the United States using this program. In my particular case, the threshold is $750. I've got one guy in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Somebody has to spend $3,000 to get the reward. So it depends on the level of how much your merchandise sells for, where your reward level is.
Right.
But what we found is not only does it bring the customer back more often, but more interestingly than that, and this was one of those little side things that we discovered by accident, is that when the customer's in the store that time, he spends more money when he's there because he wants to get to the next punch in the cart. So if he comes up to the counter, it's got $337 on it, you know, he says, gee, if I just spend another $13, I'd get another punch. He goes and buys another shirt and that kind of thing and just keeps going.
That's true.
So,
what do they get when they hit the jackpot?
Yeah, in our particular case, it's 15 punches, $50 a punch, which is a minimal of $750. Often they actually spend more than that because we don't give them credit for partial amounts. And then we give them, once they hit that, we give them $50 worth of free merchandise right back. So basically it's an $800 purchase or merchandise, you spend $750. So anybody who doesn't do, any retailer out there, and in most, it's good in most applications, but any retailer doesn't do some kind of frequent buyer program is just giving away money.
By the way, another trick you just mentioned is that whether it's within a frequent buy program or some other way, anytime you structure a deal where they move to the next level somehow, it will tend to increase average order size or purchasing behavior. When we went to the progressive discounts in our catalog and switched from free shipping and handling or all the other stuff I did over the years, when we went to where the discount, you get 10% off if you buy between this dollar amount and this dollar amount, but you get 15% off from here to here and 20% if you're up in here and 25%. The average size order almost doubled.
Hey, Dan, do you
because they get, like you said,
the right
they get to
there?
The... Pardon?
I think you said trick.
Yeah.
Do you think trick's the right word?
Well, probably not with the public, you know, but within discussion with us marketing girls,
yeah.
Trick, gambit, strategy, tactics,
schemes.
Yeah, the word is schemes. A good word, TJ. That's absolutely right. Anyway, when
it's
they
just
get
natural, thing
you know,
that people tend to like respond.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I like that. I like having some, you know, some plan or goal, or hey, I can, you know, spend a little more and I can get more. I mean, I like that.
Mm-hmm. I want to point out that that Bill gives them $50 worth of clothes, which probably cost him $2. So he's not even spending
that. I don't think his markup's that good.
Maybe. So he's probably not even spending a very small amount of money. We do something very similar at every one of our events. Give out a referral form, and they just fax it into us, and we give them a $100 certificate if the customer buys X number of dollars worth of stuff. And the first 30 days that I implemented that program, it created about $30,000 worth of free revenue that we wouldn't have got. That cost us absolutely nothing to get, except for commissions that we paid on it. But a $100 certificate, I don't know what that's, maybe $10 cost us to give it out. So, but it's a big, strong, high perceived value to the customer.
And by the way, if your customers are uncooperative with this kind of thing, it tells you got bigger problems. It's not that the technique's not working, it's you got relationship problems.
In other words, if your customers don't refer anybody, you've got problems.
Yeah, or if you got if you got a good frequent buyer program and it doesn't increase the frequency of purchasing, it's not because frequent buyer programs don't work, it's because there's some other problem inherent in the relationship with your customers. But most people react the other way. Oh, that thing doesn't work. Well, you know, it's like we've all used it, the fax to send out to get test testimonials. And I'll have somebody say, nobody, my customers won't give me testimonials, so that doesn't work. Well, it's not that that doesn't work, you nitwit. It's because you've got a problem with your customers here.
With our service business clients, the heating, air, and the plumbers, for referrals, they a lot of times they'll have a hard time getting the technicians to ask for them, whether they've got a good system in place or not. So they do have to incentivize.
Sure.
Give them incentives. I want to, Bill, you never mentioned what you guys do, but what we teach our clients to is if they have their techs just give out their business cards, and if anybody calls in because they have the business card, they get $5.
Well, what we always did with the docs, because some of the doctors, no matter how much you teach it, they won't do it.
Right.
Is we said
if everybody passes out a business card pretty easily.
Yeah, and we always then did a direct mail follow-up. If you absolutely know you're absolutely going to refuse to talk to the customer, then here's the you two can refer a letter to send out immediately after the point of greatest happiness, like the same day that they had their service or their adjustment or their whatever. So you got to be honest about it. Some people, as you say, just will not do it.
How do you incentivize your salespeople?
We give the salesperson $5 for every referral that actually comes to the door. Because if you don't give the salesperson an incentive, he's not going to do it. Because all salespeople are very much instant gratification people. They only want to they want to make money on the sale they made that moment. So if they don't see some kind of opportunity to make money, they're not going to do it. So you can't expect that, this is your job, you go out and get referrals. You got to give them a reason to go and do it.
Everybody that works with clients that have employees, you could be teaching them all. Those employees hand out their business cards to every single person they know. Everybody on their memory jogger. And all the employees get their $5.
Well, I have a chiropractor story that I used to tell to all the chiropractors, and they would all pale. But we had this chiropractor in a management program, and he had 5 staff people. And his deal was he leased them all 5 red convertibles. At the time, they were vets. And every staff person who worked for him had the use of a red Corvette convertible. Here's the keys. The doc even got insured it, gassed it, and paid for the car washes. Only trick is, from your own circle of influence, Miss Employee, not from in the practice, but from your family or your friends and the people you hang out with, you got to bring in 2 new patients a month that come in as a direct referral for you. Miss 1 month, you're on notice. 2 months in a row, car's gone. Right? So he said, do the math. At the time, the car was costing like $350 a month. Each patient's worth $1,500. I'm guaranteed at the beginning of the month, I got 10 new patients doing nothing at the lowest cost of new patient acquisition on the planet. They're all driving around in their shiny convertibles. Everybody's saying, where are you get the car? Oh, my doctor gives it to me. Your doctor gives it to me. He said, I got the best people in town from everybody else's office coming over here trying to get a job, banging on my door, wanting to work for me.
He's doing it. He's get paid there, doing it to avoid pain.
Oh, yeah, to avoid it. You're right, to avoid having the car taken away, because now you've created a meaningful threat.
Yeah, fear of loss as opposed to a gain.
Yeah,
and
the threat of just losing a job isn't enough.
Desperation, not nice.
Yeah, that's a real golden handcuff.
Yeah, isn't that clever?
It is cool.
However, by the way, I've been telling that story since 1983, and to the best of my knowledge, nobody's ever done it except this one guy.
Well, I used to provide my top 2 reps a Lexus,
But with a threat of a pull?
Oh, yeah.
Tied to some kind of performance? Yeah, okay. Now, a whole other issue, and then we'll go to a break. I'll let you, but I was coming to you anyway.
The office, too. The fanciest office in the whole place. And if their sales slipped, they would
pack up their stuff.
Smokers. I mean, you provide it just a few seats where someone can smoke. I mean, people will break arms, make double sales just to have a smoking place.
Another approach, we're talking about getting customers back. In some businesses, in some sort of businesses, you're able to lock the customer in. And now, Joe, I was coming to you anyway, so you can do what you wanted to do, but then answer this question, too. I know you teach the carpet cleaners how to sell whatever you mean, what I would call a maintenance program. You probably have a better term for it. And I always think when I tell people this is going on, most people don't believe it. You know, that a carpet cleaner can commit somebody to a year or a 2 year program. So I would like you to explain that.
Well, we call maintenance programs, but there's other, you know, names like Always Clean, which is one of the trademarks that I have for a maintenance program. But basically, it's where someone is put on a till for bid notice, which basically means you pay for the service until you say to stop. And as an example, I have a couple of clients, Joel and Julie Cohen, who've they're really young. They've been using my stuff for a few years, and they make, you know, over $250,000 a year. And they have, I talked to them a couple weeks ago, and they have 108 people paying an average of $38 a month to have their carpets cleaned.
And it's automatically charged to the credit card.
It's automatically charged to the credit card. And so it's cash flow that always comes in. It's over $4,000 a month that they get in. That covers all their, you know, fixed overhead expenses. And it's, you know, it's a great situation because they're never at fear of having a slow season running out of money. And it's
Plus, that customer is now impervious to competition.
Yes, the iron cage.
Yeah, and I mean, it doesn't matter how many Valpak coupons show up on that person's desk, or kitchen counter, they're not even noticing it because they have that part of their life taken care of.
See, most business people don't think about the future. And when they're there in a situation of a carpet cleaning job, they perform the service, and they don't realize that 6 months to a year later, when the people can have their carpets cleaned again, is going to come rather quickly. So what do? They do the service, they collect a check, and they run off and they forget about them, and they chase new customers. And then what happens is 6 months to a year later, if they're even smart enough to do mailings and continually stay in touch with these people, they still have to resell them again. Whereas I teach them, you know, while you're there, you know, going back to referrals, what Chauncey was talking about, what's so important is timing. I mean, you have the great line that the difference between lettuce and garbage is timing. That's absolutely true.
Between salad and garbage, but...
Okay, salad and garbage.
If you're going to steal.
All right. Well, I was crediting you.
Yes, I appreciate it.
I could have just said lettuce, it would have been my own thing.
Yeah, I noticed at the very beginning of our time together, Craig's teaching my three-part slide here, and not giving me any credit. That is
But, you know, I mean, the time to actually get people on a maintenance program, the time to get a referral from people is right when that euphoric gas is running through their head, which is right at the point of purchase when they're most happiest and most familiar with whatever service that you provided. And so while a cleaner's at somebody's home, you schedule the next cleaning is the first thing. The second thing you could do is you could actually put them on a continuity type basis. So whenever you're making a sale, you're not just making a sale and then you're going to have to resell them again. You're actually putting them on a continuous sale where they've actually given you permission to charge money to their credit card or receive checks by phone or whatever, and that becomes you know, great business. It's what I do with my coaching program. It's what I do with my tape of the month. It's what I teach my cleaners with the maintenance program.
And that program applies to any service business on the planet and many of the product businesses.
Absolutely. Continuity.
Well, when I moved to Phoenix, they've since sold it and the people changed it, and I don't know the economics, but there was a upscale restaurant here, and they sold, we were in for lunch, and guy comes over to the table and pitches this. They sold a membership, which got you seating in the better room with the fireplace and the view and all that stuff. And, of course, your membership card and a guaranteed table. No matter how busy they were, they had tables reserved at all times for their members. And you were auto-charged at the time. I think it was $69 a month to your credit card, and that entitled you to two lunches and two dinners anytime during the month you wanted it for two.
Hey, I belong to a club, charged me $74 a month whether I eat there or not.
Yeah, but I mean, this was really an ordinary restaurant, but what they were doing was brilliant because they're taking advantage of what's called breakage, that not everybody's going to come in and use it, but because you are getting whacked, you do kind of want to use it, and so instead of somebody says, well, let's go over here for lunch, no, let's go here because I'm paid for that. I just thought it was brilliant.
Same thing. I got to go eat at my club once or twice a month, or I feel like I've got a rook band month.
Right.
$74 and didn't even show up.
I teach a variation of the same thing to my auto repair guys. The one thing that most people need to have done to their cars most often in a year is get an oil change. And one way that I teach them.
I just figured when the red light comes on, add new, it'll get mixed. That's my fear.
You know what's nice in that? I was having lunch with him probably 4 years ago, and he drove some Cadillac or something.
That's my town car.
Yeah, Dan.
Kenny, by the way, and he had like 86,000 miles on this thing, and I think he told me he had the oil changed twice.
Oh, two times at 86,000.
Because when the red light comes on, that's the
anyway, a good customer. Someone that will take care of their car, you know, about every three, four months or so, they're going to be in the door somewhere to get their oil changed. And the big problem that the guys have is there's always cheap oil changes out there, so you have the people that are just hopping from one shop to another. One way I teach them is to have a prepay oil change club that's good for about 14 months, and it gives them four oil changes at a discounted price. I teach that in lieu of, you know, the punching the card idea that you have there, because as far as, you know, my guys are concerned, and as far as I'm concerned, is if you punch the card and you get only so far into the card really has no value because you didn't pay for it. But if they pay up front and they prepaid for those four oil changes and there's a deadline on there of 14 months, which is plenty of time, they're going to use it. But then there is, you know, the people that just won't use it, so that's how they're going to make, you know, a little of the extra money. But you're going to lock in that person because who knows, the next time that they need to get their oil changed, they may go to a shop and they're going to get their brakes checked and they're going to wind up with a whole new set of brakes at that shop. So I teach them to lock them in.
There's a case right here, right now. I'm pulling out my wallet and I'm pulling out a card here from the Tree Steakhouse where they punch me every time I go in to get a dinner because I get half off the second dinner. I can write a check for about anything I need on this planet. And here I am carrying a card around so I can get half off of my dinner.
Very important point, because a lot of people say, well, these kind of techniques only work for the low end of the marketplace. Yeah, they're not going to work for my customers because my customers are too sophisticated, too rich, too... Everybody loves a bargain. Everybody responds to a loyalty program. Doesn't matter what their demographic.
But that card that Ron just had wasn't some cheap, flimsy piece of yellow paper.
Like this one that I'm carrying.
You know, the company spent just a little bit extra, made the card really look nice, too.
You know what? Every year they call me, and they don't have to sell me. They ask me how many I want. I usually buy four or five and give them away. There's no sales to this. I mean, you know, what took you so long to call me? I'm about to run out.
You know, there's a couple larger points with these continuity programs we're talking about. Like, Joe, you should be teaching the cleaners and Ron and anybody else. For instance, take heating and air guys and plumbing guys. You know, they've got to get service agreements going, which is the same thing. You know, get them to pay up front so I can come in and tune up your system, and while I'm there, I'm going to notice that you need this, 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 and this, and I'm your guy to get the markup on parts and labor. Plus, every 10 years, they're going to need a new furnace and air conditioner, so when the big jackpot comes in, they only think of me because I'm their contractor. So, you know, cleaners, they need to be thinking about, maybe they set up a joint venture system with a carpet in, you know, somebody that can sell these people new carpeting when they need it. Because the carpet cleaner is going to know when they need new carpeting, right?
Yeah, which we do have actually situations where they have it.
And the other thing is, the whole valuation of a heating and air conditioning or a plumbing company is based on how many service agreements they've got. I mean, what other asset, if they want to sell their carpet cleaning business, what assets are they?
Well, exactly. I mean, I think how much more valuable a carpet cleaning business is that has $4,000 a month guaranteed base income that's on auto charge on the first of every month when you wake up.
That's right.
Then, you know, a regular one. I mean, it's the way to create equity in a business.
Yeah, an analyst comes in and says, how many of these do you have? How much time do they have left on them? And that's how they evaluate part of the way they evaluate the business.
Okay. Biggest single multi-million dollar breakthrough strategy. If you could only keep one, you could only teach one, you could only use one, or what's the thing that's been had the biggest impact in your business, or a case history, a success story, one of your guys that's had the biggest impact? Yeah.
Okay, so Dan, I'm going to start out kind of at the bottom of the barrel, because basically that's kind of where I come from. This is Bob Willis. I'm a dentist, and basically, we do all things like personal. We just like, I'm going to personally get somebody in, and it's all one-on-one kind of mentality. And the biggest breakthrough that I see that we've used is transforming from I've got to talk to each and every prospect, because if I don't talk to them, they're never going to sign up. And taking that to doing something very simple, like a conference call where you put all these prospects on here, and I'm not even on the call, and we just do a tape testimonial of guys talking, and they listen to that for a half an hour, and we pitch them.
Finding economy of scale through numbers or through tools.
Yes, and rather than doing it 1Z, 2Z the rest of your life, and that's probably the biggest thing anybody can do to start jumpstart their business from where it is if they're a ground-level business like ours is.
Very good. Okay, who's next?
I've taught our clients that if they had to, you know, unless they're a startup, but if they've been in business for a few years, if they had to, they could quit marketing for new customers. And they could just concentrate, you know, I've got 4,000 customers, what can I reoffer these people? And just go back to them and multiply, you know, you get new customers off referrals and stuff. But just with continuity, you know, their service agreements, like we talked about earlier. And they could build, they could double their business without ever having to get a new customer.
Well, there's a guy in your field, Bob, in dentistry, and I can't think of his name, but here's how he makes his living. He goes and he finds the biggest dental office in the city, and he cuts a deal with them. And he goes in and runs a reactivation campaign, kind of the equivalent of what in retail in your industry would be the going out of business guys that come in and camp and run the go out of business sale, except this dentist isn't going out of business. But he goes in and he uses his money. He does all the mailings. All he wants is access to the dentist's files and you know, the use of his name. And he does everything. He brings his people in to take those phone calls. They set up a separate phone number. He puts up all the dough. He does the mailing. He camps there for a month, and he takes half the gross. And then he goes on to the next one. And because there's so much money laying in the files, that the guy makes himself $500,000 a year going from dental office to dental office to dental office. And I bumped into him, you know, off and on over the years. I mean, in the winter he goes to Florida, in the summer he goes to where he wants to be. And, you know, I mean, that's his whole modus operandi. And I bet most businesses, just an outsider could go in and take the customer list and as you say, zero new marketing, and there's just a mountain of money laying there.
Yeah, it depends. You know, it depends on what they'll do. You know, we tell them to have these sales, you know, tied into events. But I have my clients tie their reactivation into events too, whether it's the Super Bowl or it's holidays, you know. And you know, you got to give them the reason, you know, the whole reason why advertising, and that might be faxing, postcards, telemarketing, or as our good friend Ronald Graham would, you know,
telemarketing.
We're gonna get there.
I have no doubt.
It's on your list.
We have a pool. Everybody's picked a time and put in $5.
I lost $5.
Yeah. And then finally, absolutely shocked. And then finally, the quickest and easiest is to add an upsell to absolutely everything. You know, every contact has to be added. Every communication with the customer, an upsell has to be added.
Any business that answers its own phones and does not have an upsell script or something, it's just stupid. It's just incredibly. And like you said yesterday, when we can get them to do it, right? Because, I mean, in your it works every time. By the way, tweaking those things. I was just at a meeting at Guthrie Record. Let's listen to this. And it sort of has to do with micromanagement versus macromanagement. Somebody finally decided, because they, in the Victoria Principal business, the Victoria Principal skincare business last year, they took over 2 million inbound phone calls. So somebody thought it might be a good idea to, like, look at the way the calls are being handled, and maybe there's some money there that we could improve the results, right? Now, 2 million phone calls a year, I'd have somebody every hour trying to figure out, you know. But, you know, this is probably months since somebody's looking. They have a, you know, fast ship option, which is fundamentally an upsell because there's markup over and above the cost. Changing the script from essentially, we have a fast ship option, it gets it to you in 3 days instead of in 2 weeks, would you like it, to most of our customers prefer the fast ship option, which gets it to you in 3 days for whatever it is extra. Would you like that too? 30% increase in the number of people taking the fast ship option. one sentence change in a script. Little hinges swing big doors. Next.
Personally, in my business, the biggest boom to my business is in the way that I have started to attract leads via using fax broadcast.
Who are you?
Ron Ipack. And the reason why it's a boom is because with a simple phone call, with the right list, a press of a button, I can get my message out to 10, 20, 30, 50,000 people with very little effort on my part. When you're doing large tests like that, you can vary things, and I found a few ways to tweak to get a lot more people to respond to the offer that I have. The next thing is finding more creative ways to make offers to people that don't buy from you. The trickle-down effect. What is it, that I can do that's going to make somebody do that sale?
Don't you think most people give up on their prospects too quick?
Way too early.
That's just,
yeah.
If somebody was willing to raise their hand and identify themselves as interested in X, it seems to me, like you say, you should keep going back to them and trying to change the story a little, change the offer a little, change the price, change the terms, change the guarantee.
Yeah, that's a big thing that I think all of us really need to realize, and those listening to the tapes too, is if you can identify the market, get them to raise their hand, you can throw all your resources right at those people.
Now, like in your own business, in your marketing sequence now, how many steps do you have?
I have seven steps.
Seven steps. Joe? In your own business, how many steps?
I have six.
Six. Craig?
I currently have seven, but I've tested as many as 10.
Okay. Chauncey?
Five with three extra ones that I could do before the seasonal part.
Okay. Doesn't quite apply to you. Jim?
They get six standard steps, and then they get the faxes for the seasonal sales, and then they get the final one, pay anything you want.
We won't talk about mine because I'm embarrassed.
Considering you pretty much created the whole thing.
Shoemaker kid shoes and all of that. Okay. Anything else?
No, that's...
Okay. Who's next?
I'll jump in if you want. I guess the biggest boom from my perspective, again, on the retail side, Bill Glazer, and Ron's telling me to mention my name, is the retail side, we all have employees who work as sales associates, and the salespeople traditionally will complain in a retail store, no customers walk in the store today. But then they also complain that they're so damn busy they can't do anything else. And what we have done is we've actually taken all their downtime, and we've said to them, you've got to be proactive and you've got to do telemarketing. So Ron will appreciate this. But what we find is that what we're successful is doing telemarketing to our current customers, not to prospects, but to people that have bought with us in the past. And what we've done is we've developed a two-minute, seven-step call. The whole call only takes 2 minutes, but you can go through seven steps. And what it does is it takes what Dan has taught, where the associate goes from a unwelcome pest to a welcome guest on the phone, where actually the customer is very happy to hear from that person.
Say that again.
A welcome pest to a welcome guest on the phone. So the customer is happy to hear from them, and the ultimate goal is to set up appointments where the customer comes in the store, a date and time appointment. And in our retail stores, and I'm teaching this to many people around the country, up to 35% of our sales are actually generated from appointments that are set with customers.
By phone.
Just want
to point that out.
You're preaching to the choir, Ron. I would say that's probably been our biggest boom to our retail business, sends the people that I teach.
For me, it's been packaging. This is Michael Kimball. I think more businesses could do that. I offer, one of the things that I do in one of my businesses, I offer licenses to some of our products. So what I've done is I've taken all the products and put them into one big package in the Harper Day, big package licensing deal, and that's worked really well.
Well, it raises a point that at some point in conversation yesterday this came up. So most business people underestimate the amount of money a segment of their customers will give them for something. and they don't build the biggest package. They don't build a real high-priced, premium-level package of any kind and offer that. And there's, in every customer base, there's not necessarily a big number, but a number of customers who will step up to the plate and just as easily give you a much larger number than you imagined, than the number that you get from most. And it's a mistake not to take care of those people.